Third case this morning, Lewis versus the Chicago Police Department. Counsel, you're going to have to move that a lot closer. You see? Okay. As long as you don't want us to read the small print. I assume your opponent has seen these. Has your opponent had an opportunity to look at these?
Not the demonstrators themselves, but the IMF memo, yes, and this is the language of the statute under 2000.
You want to take a look at these and see them? All right, Ms. Kurtz, you may begin.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dana Kurtz, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Donna Lewis. We are requesting that this court reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment and remand this case for trial. Your Honors, this case is about a facially discriminatory policy and the fallout from that.
Ms. Kurtz, I'll tell you, though, I think one of the key points that's going to direct the rest of the analysis in this case is going to be whether the district court correctly decided that this IMF detail was, the district court said, was not a significant enough step to count as a material adverse action for Officer Lewis. It was just sort of one of those things that comes along. Other things come along, and obviously we know not every assignment, not every overtime opportunity suddenly turns into something important enough that it affects terms, conditions, privileges, et cetera, of employment.
That's correct, Your Honor, that the district court did err in finding that the IMF conference, this special detail in Washington, D.C., was not an adverse action. Under the plain language of Title VII, 2000E, the plain language provides compensation, privileges, employment opportunities.
But how do you reconcile that with laws that, with decisions of ours, which have said, you know, not every, suppose somebody is told you're not going to get overtime hours on Thanksgiving, and they don't, and so, you know, maybe a certain amount of money is lost. Then the next time they do, well, is every single lost overtime opportunity the loss of a privilege of employment?
Not every single overtime opportunity, but when it is specifically denied based on gender or some protected classification.
So it could be a dollar if they say, we're not going to let you have the opportunity to earn this extra dollar because you're a woman. That's enough.
Your Honor, if it's a dollar in connection with other things such as training opportunity.
So it's not enough if it's a dollar. No, I just want to build up here, because if you're conceding it's not enough, that it's just you missed it because, and they say, we're not going to pay you this extra dollar because you are a woman, you don't think that would violate the statute?
It may, Your Honor, under the plain language of the statute. Here it was over $1,000. And this court specifically, in Whitaker versus Northern Illinois, 424F3D640, in 2005, found that a loss of 3 days of wages, which is less than 3 days of overtime here, was an adverse action.
And what's her annual salary?
Yeah.
Her annual salary, Your Honor, is about approximately $50,000, I believe.
So how many hours of overtime would $1,000 amount to?
It was 3 days of overtime at time and a half.
Three, okay.
Your Honors, It was not only a loss of overtime pay, it was an excellent training opportunity, which is provided for in the memo that it was an excellent on-the-job training opportunity. In fact, the record at page 770, the appendix page 770, supports that such a prestigious assignment is considered in meritorious promotions. In fact, there was evidence in the record that Officer Angel Oliver, Officer Lewis's partner, who had attended the IMF conference, was transferred to the Special Operations Section, a specialty unit to which Officer Lewis applied and was denied. There is plenty of evidence.
We don't know that this, she guarded the president on one occasion. I mean, every lost, again, I'm trying to figure out how extreme a rule you're arguing for. Every time she doesn't get some sort of potential training opportunity, even if there are 10 others that she got, the statute's been violated?
Your Honor, under the plain language of the statute, yes, if it is based on some protected classification. We are not arguing for an extreme rule. We are arguing that the court follow the plain language of the statute, which provides for compensation, privileges, opportunities of employment.
It says, believe me, we get our share of lawsuits under Title VII.
Your Honor, Farragher, the Supreme Court in Farragher versus City of Boca Raton held that an adverse action is not limited to economic or tangible discrimination. This court's decisions in those cases dealing with overtime specifically look at, was there evidence upon which a jury could find that gender was a motivating factor? That is a question for the jury. There is certainly enough evidence here that it was an adverse action under the plain language of Title VII. This court in Tartt versus Illinois Power held that a transfer to a less favorable position could be an adverse action, even without a monetary amount of the transfer. There is certainly enough in this case that the denial of the opportunity in Washington, D.C. was an adverse action based on the loss of overtime, the denial of the training opportunity, the fact that even Officer Lewis testified that it was a chance of a lifetime that she could never get back. We are asking this court to follow the plain language of the statute in this case and find that that denial was an adverse action. And a jury could find that the decision to deny her the opportunity to attend was based on her gender. Your Honors, secondly...
Well, let's turn to this memo then. Because it seems to me that the intent of the memo was to ensure that there were two officers per room. You know, why should this case go to the jury?
Your Honor, that is something
that... So it may have been inartfully stated, but that was the goal or intent of the memo.
And that's certainly what the defendants argued before the district court.
Right.
And they're certainly able to argue that before a jury, but this court has repeatedly recognized on summary judgment the court is not to infer or decide questions of intent. The plain language of the memo states, a lone female officer will not be sent because there are two persons to each room.
Now, could I ask whether the record shows that had to be two female officers per district, two female officers per city, two female officers per room, ultimately? I thought there was something in the record to suggest that two male officers, one from, say, the 3rd District, one from the 4th District, were paired together.
There were male officers that were paired together from different districts, not in the 3rd District. The memo does not state that it's per district or per room. The memo specifically states...
In fact, there were some districts that sent one, a single female, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, as courts have repeatedly recognized, that does not negate the effect of the plain language of the memo. And it does not negate the fact that this memo was applied discriminatorily in the 3rd District in which no female officers were sent. And Officer Donna Lewis, her name was taken off the list to attend this IMF conference.
She was the only one that applied to go in the 3rd District.
Your Honor, she did, in response to her sergeants asking her if she wanted to attend, said that she wanted to attend. In fact, the memo required the sergeants to call everyone that qualified on the day off groups to see if they were interested in attending. The record also provides that
And was that done?
Not with respect to Officer Jackie Regan, who was another female officer who met the day off group requirements, and she was not called. In fact, Your Honors, this court just last year in that evidence that someone is lying is enough for a jury to find that an inference of discrimination. The record supports that a jury could find that Lieutenant Williams lied in his deposition when he claimed that he asked Officer Jackie Regan. In fact, Jackie Regan emphatically denies that he ever called her or anyone else ever called her to attend.
So there's a conflict in testimony on that point.
That's correct.
And your argument is that that's a material conflict.
Yes, Judge, and that a jury could certainly find, based on that evidence and the totality of the evidence that was presented before the district court and that would be presented at trial, that the decision to deny her the IMF training, the IMF conference in Washington, D.C., was based on her gender.
And so there is no evidence that any of the men were called by the sergeants, I take it.
There was evidence that the men were called by the sergeants, and in fact, from the 3rd District, it was all men who attended and no women.
But they were called, also that they were called, not that they stepped forward.
Yes, yes. Okay. And in fact, the plain language of the memo, which is at appendix 885, looking at the memo specifically states that the sergeants were to call all of the officers on their team. Your Honors, the memo is discriminatory because it applies only to women. It was used in a discriminatory fashion in the 3rd District in denying Officer
Lewis.
Well,
on its face, it's not discriminatory. It's how they used it in the 3rd, right? Because in other districts, they had women that went, right?
Actually, Judge, on its face, it is discriminatory. It only refers to a lone female officer cannot be sent.
Well, would they want to put a lone female and a lone male in the same room?
No, Judge, but the effect of this memo is that lone male officers could attend. It doesn't
They're acting as though there have to be two people in a room, but I suppose if a lone male officer went, sometimes you can get a rollaway bed and put three men in a room as opposed to two. You don't have to buy a whole additional room and have an individual room.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, the chances of an odd female and an odd male are 50-50. But yet, this policy only applies to women. It only affects women. Lone male officers could attend. The City of Chicago Police Department could have written this policy to say lone officers of the opposite sex cannot room together, or lone officers of the same sex cannot be sent without a same-sex partner. Something to that effect would have been non-discriminatory. This policy is discriminatory on its face as well as its application with respect to Officer Lewis. And, Your Honor, with respect to your comment about the fact that some supervisors from other districts sent lone female officers and lone male officers, Dana Starks, the first deputy superintendent, testified that it was an order. The fact that some supervisors did not follow this unlawful order is not a defense. There is additional evidence in the record based on Lieutenant Williams' statements that it's direct evidence. He stated he was taking her name off the list because she was female and because it was dangerous.
Well, he denied saying that, though, right?
He did deny saying that, Your Honor. And, in fact, that's a question for the jury, whereas...
So she testifies that this is the direct conversation she had with him, though. So we have her testimony that is what he said. His testimony that that's not what he said.
His testimony, Your Honor, was actually he didn't remember. Her testimony was this is what he said, and in fact it would be an admission that would be presented at trial. Your Honor, going to the third point, a reasonable jury could find that Lewis was retaliated against based on the context, the totality, and the temporal proximity of all the evidence presented in this case.
Well, listen, we have a gap here because it was September of 2002 when she made the complaint about gender discrimination. Then it was January of 2003 when the transfer took place. Why should we infer that the transfer was retaliatory given the fact that there was that gap?
Your Honor, if you look at all of the conduct, there was no gap. In fact, after she filed her grievance on September 30th, the very next day, he specifically directed her to investigate a narcotics complaint without a partner and said, if you need an assist, get a car off the watch. The Supreme Court...
Well, was there conflicting, again, was there conflict in his testimony? Did he say, I don't remember, or was there testimony that I didn't say that?
Your Honor, with respect to the narcotics call, he testified that it was possible. He told her to get an a car, if she needed an assist, to get a car off the watch. So there is some conflicting testimony, but those are questions that should be resolved by the jury, not by the district court, and not by this court. And the Supreme Court recently held in Burlington versus White, assigning an employee arduous duties can constitute retaliation that might dissuade a reasonable worker from making or supporting a charge of discrimination. That's exactly what Lieutenant Williams did here. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Woodard.
Honors, may it please the court. Officer Lewis uses Title VII and the Equal Protection Clause to complain about several things that she said occurred between September 2002 and January 2003. These things range from the trivial, that she was made to perform her regular duties, to the extreme, that she was sent to assist on a forced entry so that she would be injured.
But Ms. Wickern, let's start with this IMF opportunity. I'm troubled with the idea that even if it was a very small amount of money that she could have earned, much less $1,000, surely the city's not taking the position that you can say, the reason we're not giving you an opportunity to earn $1,000 is because you're a woman, right? The city's not...
Right, that's correct.
I mean, even though you don't have any entitlement to do it, the law is very clear that you can't say the reason I'm not going to let you try this is because you're in a protected group, whatever that group may be. If that's the case then, and we have her testimony, obviously contested, but you know, this why don't we have a material issue of fact when she says, Officer Williams told me he's taking me off the list because I'm a female, because it's going to be dangerous, I'll thank him for it eventually. Why isn't that direct contradictory evidence that perhaps something, if the jury were to believe that, then the jury would find that, in fact, she didn't get this opportunity to earn the $1,000 solely because she's female?
There is a dispute in the record as to the conversation between Officer Lewis.
Of course. Yeah, no,
well,
I understand that.
Right.
But this is summary judgment. This isn't after a trial. If it were after a trial and the jury had believed Officer Williams, nobody would probably be here.
Our position is that the court doesn't have to reach that issue on summary judgment. It doesn't need to go to a jury because Williams was not the decision maker in this case.
But so Williams, isn't that contested as well? Because the Commander Brown, looks to the people in each district to create the list.
Actually, it was Chief of Patrol Maurer.
Whoever it was. You know, but Williams is the one who removes her name from the list. Williams is the one who's compiling the list in the 3rd District.
Lieutenant Williams was acting at the direction of Commander Brown. Commander Brown received the memo, passed it on to Williams, asked him to compile the list.
So in other words, that makes him the decision maker for the list.
No, Your Honor, there's more here. Exhibit 16, pages 233 and 240 through 41, Lieutenant Williams lays out his process for how he compiled this list. He says he has the applications. He has the application of one eligible female from the 3rd District who applied for the detail. He asks Commander Brown, what do I do with this request? I have only one from a female. Commander Brown.
But where in the record does it say, since this was an event in Washington, D.C., that the city of Chicago police department had to have at the district level an even number of women when the record seems to show that for the men, they manage the two per room, same sex, perfectly reasonable requirement by having, you know, one man from District 3 and one man from District 4. So they each district sends a lone male officer, but they pair up.
There's two responses to that. One is the memo is ambiguous as to whether it's instructing the district to send two. That's how Commander Brown interpreted it. When Lieutenant Williams asked him what to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's ambiguous. That's why we should never write in a passive voice. A lone female officer will not be sent, you know, by whom and from where. But a jury could say, why are you singling out women? You'll send all the lone male officers you want, but you're not going to send a lone female officer.
I have two responses to that still. Commander Brown tells him, you must follow the memo, which states that we have to recommend a minimum of two. So that's why Lieutenant Williams didn't put Officer Lewis on the list. Second,
a rule that applies only to women.
No.
As this memo reads, this is a rule that applies only to women.
I know the city has valiantly,
in its brief, tried to say that we should actually read it as though it said brackets or man, but it doesn't, in fact, say that.
In its entire context, it makes it clear that it's because of hotel accommodation.
No, it doesn't.
Not unless there's some magic language that's missing that we're not seeing. Maybe the print is so small
we
can't
see it.
I've looked at the whole thing, and there's no magic language that clarifies this.
It does use the term lone female officer, but in that same context.
And as I just pointed out, the city's perfectly legitimate desire not to have a man and a woman sharing a room could be accommodated if you wound up, when all was said and done, with one extra woman by pulling a rollaway into a room or just bringing for the extra room and putting her in alone.
Can I continue? I just want to make sure that this is clear. Commander Brown, this was his interpretation of the memo. Lieutenant Williams was following that directive. And then when these lists were sent off to the Chief of Patrol, Maurer, to pull from them who was going to go, because remember, everyone that was recommended did not get to go, he chose some lone males from some districts and lone females. So lone males and lone females were treated the same.
Yeah, but she didn't even get an opportunity to get in that pile. Because Williams took her name off the list, and Brown agreed with that decision or recommended that he make that choice.
Right, and that's the critical difference here. It was Commander Brown's interpretation of the memo that Lieutenant Williams was following. Again, that's it.
But Commander Brown, by the same token, was relying on what Williams was doing, and we know in these decision-maker issues when the final decision maker is relying entirely on what some underling has brought forward, then what the underling did is also important.
And that's also another important point. Lieutenant Williams had the application of one female. So that was all he had, and that was what he presented to Commander Brown. I have the application of one female. Officer Lewis points out that Jackie Regan could have applied, but she didn't.
But, and you know, let me back up, though, because this is all very interesting from the city's point of view. But if her testimony is that Williams told her that it was his decision to take her off the list because she was a female and because it was going to be dangerous, don't we have a conflict in the testimony? You've got city version, comes down from Brown, goes through Williams, just doing what he was told. You have her version. Williams took it upon himself to take her off the list because she's a female.
Well, I don't think we have her statements that he said, it was my ultimate decision. True, he was compiling the list, but he was following the directive of Commander Brown.
Well, she
and
testifies,
she has no...
Williams told me to shut the door, which I did, and he said that. He said he took my name off the list because I was a female and that it was going to be a working trip and he thought it would be dangerous and that I would thank him for it later, close quote. That's in the supplemental appendix 1 at 187.
But that doesn't provide any substantiation for the fact that he was the ultimate decision maker on how the...
He tells her that he intervenes and he takes her name off the list and doesn't forward it up to Brown.
He doesn't say anything in that passage that he got the word from Brown and that's why he's taken her off the list.
Right, but the question here is whether he was the decision maker who influenced whether she went on the list. What he said to her doesn't mean that he was the decision maker, the ultimate decision maker.
But he even says he doesn't stop to say it was just a working trip. He goes further because he says he thought it would be dangerous and I would thank him for it later. So, I mean, that's his personal. That doesn't have anything to do with if we believe or if Brown, if your theory is correct, that word came down on high from Brown to him, then there's no reason to even go there to this dangerousness of the assignment.
Right, but
If it's just following orders, and if Brown has just said, hey, she can't go because we don't have two women, you know, most likely, I mean, what's the point of having this additional language in there?
Right, well,
if he didn't have some input into it.
What he said purportedly to Officer Lewis is one thing. Why she wasn't placed on the list was another, and that was there was only one female who applied for
the position. Well, again, that's the city's version, and right. A jury might believe that, but there's a question of fact, is there not, as to why she wasn't put on the list?
Absolutely not. There's nothing
sure
to rebut this version, and she has no personal knowledge of the conversation between Lieutenant Williams and Commander Brown.
But Williams would have said, the jury might think Williams would have said, gee, Officer Lewis, I'm sorry I can't put your name in this list, but there aren't two women from our mm-hmm. district. So you're not on the list. That's what he would have said. And in fact, it's partly circumstantial, but why couldn't a jury think that the way Williams phrased it indicated that in fact it was his call? He was exercising some judgment about who should be put on the list.
Particularly when he says he can't remember.
Right, but here at the summary judgment stage, she has to show that this comment was linked to the decision-maker's reason for making his decision.
And we have to take all the facts and inferences in the light most favorable to her.
And there's nothing to go against this conversation that went on between Commander Brown and Lieutenant Williams.
No.
They both testified to it. She was not there. She has no knowledge of it. So the fact that we have...
And this memo is there about a lone female officer, which probably does not help much either.
As I think Judge Williams pointed out, it's inartful, but it is clear what it means from the reading that we're talking about hotel accommodations. There had to be at least two people of the same gender in the room for privacy reasons, and that was the intent. There's no reading of it on its face that gives us the result that this was all a way to exclude women. And as we pointed out, women went on the detail.
In fact, it does say, therefore, recommend a minimum of two female officers.
That's true. It could have been better phrased. It could have said, or lone male as well. But given the reason behind it, the hotel accommodations, Chief of Patrol Maurer testifies when he wrote it, that's what he meant, that there was going to be two people in a room and they would have to be of the same gender.
I assume that if there are trips that come up in the future, that the language will be clear.
I certainly hope so, Your Honor, especially in light of our debate this morning.
Right.
Furthermore, she didn't show her claims under either the direct or indirect method because she was treated the same, as we've been discussing, as lone males. No lone male from the 3rd District was recommended. And ultimately, there were women and men, an uneven number of both, who were ultimately chosen by Chief of Patrol Maurer. Because remember, this was...
Do you know how many were sent all together?
Yes, I do, Your Honor, actually. Exhibit 28 shows that there were 262 officers total. 245 of those were male and 17 female.
And these men that didn't go
so an
for
odd number,
odd number
both.
Of female.
Right. and that was a result of Chief of Patrol Maurer was picking from these lists submitted from the district. So that was a result of that.
And
so,
then,
yes, the system could have been run differently. This was within a two-week period. It might be considered mistaken, unwise. We could do it better next time. But it wasn't the result of gender animus.
And then the men that did not go from the 3rd District, is the reason or is there any evidence in the record as to why they were not selected? Because men applied, right?
Right.
Because they were all called and they applied. So is there any evidence that they weren't selected because they were an odd number?
No. Actually, the memo asked that 16 officers and 2 sergeants from each district be recommended. Of those, 9 from the 3rd District were chosen. So even the men who wanted to go, not all of them were able to go in the end.
So 9 went from the district?
From the 3rd District.
So what happened to the odd man? He got paired with somebody from another district?
Yes. You'll see from Exhibit 28, some of them were paired together. It was ultimately Chief of Patrol Maurer who, you know, paired all these people up.
Right.
So, yes, it could have been done differently. That's not to say that it was a result of gender discrimination.
So there's no evidence that Brown had a conversation with Williams about the odd man?
No. And, okay. And they recommended 16 men, an even number of men. No lone man was recommended, while Officer Lewis was not. I would like to clear up one more thing about Jackie Regan. She was on training at the time, and the memo clearly states that those on furlough are to be called. Those on furlough were called. She was not on furlough. She came back from training, and she had days off. She said she knew about the detail, but by the time she got back to the office, the time was up for applying, so she didn't apply. So there's no evidence here that the fact that she wasn't called was a design to somehow exclude women from the 3rd District. And, in fact, the dispute between Lieutenant Williams and Jackie Reading about their conversation is not material to the case. Turning now to Officer Lewis. Oh, I see my time is almost
up.
We have
another minute.
And then just in terms of, you know, the importance of this mission, you know, the memo that comes down says it's an excellent on-the-job training exercise as a prelude to our city's anticipated demonstration in November. And that was that huge demonstration that was coming to Chicago, correct?
Right. And that's the thing.
The huge immigration.
Monetary fund.
It was just a couple months later, and that just goes to show that these details were regularly offered, that she had another chance to do so. There's evidence in the record that there was another chance to go to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration. And even Exhibit 4, page 61, she admits that this ended up being no different from other details. I see my time is up, and we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Kurtz, you have 1 minute.
Your Honors, I've listened to my esteemed colleague speak to you for 15 minutes, and nothing she has said squares the memo with the plain language of Title VII. All of defendants' excuses are asking Your Honors to draw inferences against the plaintiff and in favor of the defendant, which on summary judgment the court cannot do. My esteemed colleague also mentioned that Lieutenant Williams attempted to assign her performing regular duties. As the Supreme Court held in Burlington, even the assignment to the most arduous duties, and in this case in policing where context matters, assigning her specifically to the most dangerous calls is enough under Burlington versus White to cause a reasonable police officer dissuade a reasonable police officer from making or supporting a charge of discrimination in this case. Certainly a jury could find that based on the totality of the evidence and in the context, and we request that this court reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Kurtz. Thanks to both counsel.